Welcome to the Ninth Circuit. Judge Hamilton of the Fourth Circuit is sitting with us this week. We are glad that we could accommodate you with the televised argument, although, as we told you, the Assistant U.S. Attorney who just appeared, we are somewhat concerned about the policy of the State of Montana. U.S. Attorney, you know, not appearing at arguments. In any event, counsel for petitioner, please, for the defendant, please.
Yes, thank you. My name is Jeremy Yellen, and I represent Kim Smith. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, if I may. I believe that our arguments have been fairly succinctly briefed. I attempted to file a 28J letter this morning referring to the Blakely case that recently came down, as well as a case called U.S. versus Booker from the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, which was handed down this week, because I think it applies very closely to the second argument that we've raised related to the enhancement of Ms. Smith's sentence from a level 8 to a level 12 to a level 20, based upon an aggravating factor, specifically that Ms. Smith intended to obstruct the administration of justice. We argued that there was no evidence at the sentencing hearing to justify that finding by Judge Haddon, and the standard that the court should have applied was clear and convincing at the time. We've argued in our brief, by analogy, that other cases where there are other charges that are similar but not the same require, have a specific element that require that the person act with the intent to obstruct the administration of justice. In this case, we argued that there was no element, there was no proof at trial, and there was no proof at the sentencing to support
whether
that.
Whether you're right or not depends on whether retaliated. She was found to have retaliated against a witness by physical force or threat of physical force, right?
That's correct, by threat, Your Honor.
The jury was instructed that they had to find knowingly threatened bodily harm. Is that correct?
Yes, it is, Justice Fletcher. However, the jury was not instructed on anything related to affecting the administration of justice, obstructing the administration of justice, which,
well,
of course,
that depends on whether you think that retaliating against a witness is automatically something done with an intent to obstruct justice or not. In other words, it seems to me your burden is to demonstrate there's some difference of consequence, which would require an additional fact-finding in order to find an intent to obstruct justice beyond an intent to retaliate against a witness, right?
Yes.
All right. So what's the difference between intending to retaliate against a witness and intending to obstruct justice?
Well, retaliation against a witness can be because you're upset, as in this case, the allegation was that a family member was witness against my client's son, and my client went to the witness's parents' house and was allegedly upset and made some threatening comments. There's no evidence, or there's been no evidence presented at any stage of this case, on any level of proof that is looked at, that she intended to obstruct the administration of justice. And simply because somebody gets mad at somebody doesn't mean they get this 8-level enhancement, which results from a sentence of 10 to 16 months to tripling the sentence to 33 to 41 months. And, of course, with Blakely and Booker,
retaliate certainly includes some sense of punishing somebody for having done something, i.e., in this case, being a witness, right?
That's what
doesn't retaliate mean I'm doing this to you because of what you did in this instance, being a witness. So the question is whether that is sufficient to show an intent to obstruct justice, because obviously, if witnesses were going to get beat up, they're unlikely to cooperate with the justices.
Well, the interesting feature in this case, Justice, is that these people who were threatened, allegedly, these people who were threatened were the parents of the actual witness. So we have that added dimension. In addition to there being no lack of this intention to obstruct justice, we have the actual threatened party being somebody or some people, because there were two, other than the actual witness. So basically what Judge Haddon did was he found that because my reading of the court's transcript of the sentencing and hearing of it is that simply because she retaliated, that is sufficient to constitute in order to obstruct the administration of justice. But also, in addition to that, in order to justify this 8-point jump, they also have to show that this is one of the most serious forms of retaliating against a witness or obstruction of justice, intention to obstruct justice, which we also argued there was no evidence of that. There were threats. There was no actual contact. These people were family members. They were next-door neighbors. They had known each other for years. So we stringently argued that that's not applicable, especially in light of Blakely and Booker.
Well, Blakely and Booker would only be relevant if your going-in premise was correct. That is, that there's a difference between retaliation and an intent to obstruct justice. So if there's no difference, then the fact was found by the jury and there's no Blakely problem.
Yeah, but in my search, I couldn't find anything that would, one would be tantamount to the other. If one was tantamount to the other, there would not be this extra requirement that the government prove, even at a sentencing hearing, to justify this eight level increase. So I think that it's clearly an extra element, clearly wasn't proved to any level at any stage, certainly wasn't proved at trial. And we're not even clear, based upon the record, if the court even, if this panel or the Ninth Circuit viewed, if the Ninth Circuit viewed that Blakely doesn't apply, we're not certain that the district court applied the proper standard of proof, which is clear and convincing as opposed to a preponderance of the evidence because of the level jump. So we argue either way, there isn't enough to justify this eight point leap. If I can turn to the first argument relative to jurisdiction, this is a very complicated issue in my mind to sort it out, and I try to be clear in the brief. But the crux of my argument is based upon the Begay case that was cited in both briefs, Mr. Thagard as well as myself, where we believe the facts of this case and the charge in this case relate to federal enclave law, in which the situs of the offense is an element of the crime, which we believe is the case here, and because the underlying offense of burglary does not have nationwide applicability, the district court did not have jurisdiction over Ms. Smith's case. So I'd like to reserve the rest of my time, if I may, unless the panel has further questions.
That's fine.
Thank you.
We'll reserve the rest of your time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you put the TV around so I can see it? There's no one else to see it. So, for some reason, we can't do that. Mine's not in color, and it's very hard to see. I don't know why mine's different. I think mine's broken. That's way better. Thank you.
That's fine. The audience could come and sit over here if you...
Even there's something screwed up. Mine doesn't have the color that Judge Fletcher's has and Judge Hamilton's has. I don't know why. Different. I don't know why.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Thank you. Thank you very much. Mr. Thagard.
Good morning. My name is Joe Thagard, and I'm the AUSA who handled this case. And on behalf of the government, I do thank the court for allowing us to appear by video conference this morning. With respect to Mr. Yellen's first issue, which concerns the eight-level enhancement, it's the government's position that Blakely does not apply to the sentencing guidelines. And I recognize that the Seventh Circuit has held elsewhere, otherwise.
Suppose it does. Would it make any difference here?
I don't believe it does. And it's the government's position that even if Blakely were to apply in this instance, that the finding that was required by the jury in the jury instructions, that they had to find that this was an act of retaliation, amounts in and of itself to obstruction of justice. When witnesses are threatened, and when witnesses, the families of witnesses are threatened, it's the government's position that is, in and of itself, obstruction of justice. It's the government's position that there's no other way to view that. Retaliation is simply that. It undermines the criminal justice system. It undermines the willingness of witnesses to assist government.
Isn't the question whether an intent to obstruct justice is a future-looking intent, whereas retaliation is a back-looking intent? I mean, that would not be an odd way to read the provisions, would it? I mean, usually you say you have an intent to obstruct justice, you don't mean yesterday, you mean tomorrow.
I agree, and I agree that it is a future-looking act. But I also, Judge, believe that it is so inextricably intertwined with the retaliation that when a person goes out and threatens to harm someone, they are retaliating, but there is also, at the very least, implicit within that, an intent to prevent that person from further cooperating with the authorities. And it's the government's position that that's what happened in this case. I think it's reasonable in reading the district court's findings and finding that the enhancement was appropriate here. You know, the district court said that it noted that retaliation against the witness was one of the offenses cross-referenced by the enhancement here. And so I think that while there may be some distinction that retaliation can be backward-looking, that it certainly is also forward-looking, and it is, in fact, obstruction of justice. And I would also address the issue of the severity of the conduct here. It is true, Judge, that the defendant was related to the victims, and they had homes next to each other. That is not necessarily unusual in a rural area of Montana. We all know each other. It's just simply a fact of life out here. But what I do think is important here and goes to the severity of the conduct is the fact that the defendant came into the victim's home uninvited. She was not invited in there. She essentially walked in there and began issuing threats to kill the victim's daughter, who was the witness in this case, to kill the LaPlantes themselves, the parents of the witness, and kill their uncle, who was an older individual. Those sort of threats, fortunately, were not carried out. It does not, however, diminish the seriousness of those. Those sort of threats undermine justice.
One strange bit of fact here, though, is that the only gun was the victim's. Is that right? The victim pulled out a gun.
It is true. And I suppose that may be another fact of living in Montana. And I don't wish to make light of it, but people are armed. And they do use firearms to protect themselves. And that certainly escalated this circumstance, but I also think it's a testament to how seriously the victims took the threats that were issued against them. That they were scared enough that they felt obliged to drive the defendant and her husband out of the residence at the point of the gun. And so it's the government's position that it's not only a threat that was issued here, but that it's very serious and it was appropriate to do the eight-level enhancement. I would just briefly...
Excuse me for interrupting, but given the reasoning that the district court explained in exercising his discretion, do you think that he was correct when he found that the offense was committed with significant planning, and it was of a more than a limited duration, and that it didn't represent a marked deviation by the defendant from otherwise law-abiding life? Does the record support that?
I do, Your Honor. And the reason, and Judge Hatton, I think, made some fairly extensive findings in this regard. And one of the things that occurred was the defendant normally or typically resided in Arizona and had known for some time that Carrie LaPlante, the witness in this case, had given this evidence against the defendant's son. And so she had certainly had time to reflect between traveling from Arizona to Montana about what to do. I mean, this was not necessarily an instance where she learned at one moment that the LaPlante child had given this evidence and then just a moment later turned around and issued these threats. There was a significant lapse of time.
Didn't she come to the reservation every summer?
She did come to the reservation every summer, but it appeared that there was some period of time, certainly more than a day, elapsed between the time that she learned who had provided this information and when she made the threats. Basically, what had happened was she had learned sometime earlier that her son was under indictment for the burglary, and then at some point had apparently spoken with her son's defense attorney. It was after that conversation, at some point, there had been some time, perhaps a time, that she went into the LaPlante's home and made this. So there was a lapse of time, and I think that it allowed for the court to find that there was significant premeditation. I will concede that this woman has led, from whatever we could see here, a pretty law-abiding life, and that this was a different action that she, you know, was inconsistent with her normal way of life. However, whether it raises the level of being aberrant behavior or not is another matter, and the district court found otherwise, and I think on the record before it, that was not an abuse of its discretion.
But you do agree that that's reviewable?
I do agree that it's reviewable, yes. And my final issue would simply be to address the issue of the subject matter jurisdiction. It's simply the government's position that this crime charged against the defendant was a crime of general applicability. It was not tied to the situs of the crime, and that the court had jurisdiction. Unless the panel has other questions for me, I'll resume my seat.
That's fine.
Let me ask a question. Are you able to see us clearly and hear us?
I can't see terribly clearly, Judge. There's sort of a split screen. We can see each one of you, and you're in black.
And vice versa. I've had a lot of difficulty with being able to see you. You're sort of going in and out of focus, which is only pertinent to the question of whether we are comfortable with these kinds of arguments. My conclusion at the end of this argument is not very much.
Well, I will pass that along to my superior.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not sure how much time I have left.
You have about 2 minutes and 2 seconds.
Okay, thank you very much. With regard to this aberrant behavior, there's only speculation and conjecture as to whether there was significant planning. As Justice Hamilton pointed out, Kim Smith was from Browning. She was educated by and large in that area. She had family there. She had a sick mother there. She had a property right next door. There's no planning. It's pure speculation. The government didn't even, I don't believe they argued planning to any great degree at the sentencing hearing. And with regard to limited duration, there's the same notion. The parts of the transcript I cited said that this was a very limited duration, and clearly this was Kim Smith's only brush with the law, and we've gone into great detail to explain that. And as Judge Haddon remarked, this was highly unusual. She had the most letters of support of anybody he's been in front of. And that just goes to the aberrant conduct that occurred this day with Ms. Smith. But back to the issue of the intent to obstruct the administration of justice. Kim Smith had no way to defend that aspect at the trial because there was no element There was no specific element to that. There was no way to defend that.
The element was she whether it excuse me, didn't she have to intend to retaliate?
Intent to retaliate, but there was nothing that she knew she had to defend and say, hey, I may have lost my temper, but I certainly didn't intend to stop somebody from testifying. And specifically, whether this retaliation has the ultimate result of undermining, it has to be the intent to obstruct the administration of justice. And on that intent element, we argue that there was no proof of any kind other than the fact that if you retaliate against a witness, which wasn't the case here, but if you retaliate against a witness, the necessary corollary to that is you must have intended to obstruct the administration of justice. You could have just lost your cool. You could have just gotten mad because they were a family member and they really hurt your feelings. It had to be because you wanted to stop the wheels of justice, which they have to prove. They didn't prove. And we believe that because of that, and because Kim Smith did not have the opportunity to even try to defend that at trial with the requisite proof and the requisite other constitutional protections, she can't be held to that standard at this point. So we believe that she, frankly, if her argument is viewed persuasive, she should be out because she's been in for 13 months already. And we're hopeful that because of the law as it is now in the facts of this case, that the court will at the very least find that she should be released and at best find that the government had no jurisdiction based upon the specific facts of this particular case, namely retaliating against the witness where the underlying offense was burglary, which is necessarily an offense that is solely there because of the site of the crime and because of everybody being Native Americans, essentially.
Although your time is up, counsel, I just wanted to clarify one point. The trial of the son had not taken place at the time of this incident, is that correct?
That is very true.
Okay, thank
you very much. And thank counsel. The case of United States v. Smith is submitted, and we are in recess. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Perry and attorneys. This is Dennis DeLong with the Ninth Circuit Court as far as technical support is concerned. Could I keep you there for just a moment? Court is officially stopped. This is just in regard to technical aspect. The judges have left the courtroom. Are you able to hear me? She's in.